Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand.
And then you got
Gratian tribute tomorrow night.
How's that?
I had enough of the old bastard when he was in power.
Couldn't be more excited about the show this week. I have been looking for an insider in Ottawa to take me into the world of political reporters, and you could not ask for more of an insider than this. Susan Delacourt has been covering politics in Canada for over three decades. She writes for The Star. She wrote for The Post. She wrote for The Globe and Mail, Ottawa Citizen. She's been given a Lifetime Achievement Award. She's written four books. She knows the culture of Ottawa inside and out, and she has agreed to come on the show to talk about it, to talk about the problems within political reporting in Canada, which she'll tell you in a moment, have never been more grave.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer. And it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day-to-day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
One thing I really like about FreshBooks.com, the company that exclusively sponsors this show, is that when you create invoices through their service, it's not only really quick and easy to make and to send them, they also look really good. I used to use Microsoft Word to send invoices, and I got to tell you, comparing the two, the homemade ones looked kind of homemade. They looked kind of amateurish. If, as a freelancer, an entrepreneur, a small business, you take yourself seriously and you want your clients to take you seriously as a professional, think about using FreshBooks. Check it out, FreshBooks.com.
The world of journalism itself in Canada is a pretty small world, mm-hmm. You learn that at your peril. So the world of political journalism is even smaller, and most people in it have known each other for years.
Does that make it difficult to have a discussion about the trade itself?
No, I think sometimes that's all we do talk about. I think we were a bit disappointed, I say we collectively in Ottawa, when the Harper government first came to power and was definitely trying to curtail, the rights and freedoms of journalists on the Hill, just almost antagonistically playing with us. It was shocking, the silence from other reporters and other journalists in Canada. No one else stood up for the Ottawa reporters. We all go to these fundraising dinners where we're praising the brave people in other countries for standing up to governments, but we didn't see any of that here in Canada. And I found it baffling, actually, that there wasn't anybody willing to stand up and say, what's going on there in Ottawa?
That sounds like it's worth talking about a bit more. I mean,
yeah.
Specifically, how has this prime minister changed what it means to be a political reporter and curtailed the press?
Well, I think the prime minister fundamentally has a misunderstanding of what the media does, and he shouldn't, because all of us, I knew Stephen Harper quite well. He was a pundit. He was a regular on Don Newman's politics show. He very much liked reporters. But as soon as he got into office, he seemed to regard his problems with the media seem to be part grudge and part practical. And he actually uttered a great line, a very revealing line, saying, if they're not going to help us get our message out, we'll just go elsewhere. In other words, he thinks that the role of the political journalists on the Hill is not accountability or anything like that. He saw us as another power elite that had to be controlled it's not like we were wildly out of control. It was the idea that we weren't helping, and we weren't helping him get his message out.
Like, that's the job, is to get his message
mm-hmm.
out. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't tend to see things that way.
Yeah. And so what has he done to...
Oh, well, first of all, he doesn't... I think you'd be surprised to find, if you came to Ottawa, you will never see the prime minister. He doesn't walk in front of the media. He never walks down those stairs in the foyer. I actually kicked up a fuss about this. One day I tried to leave the Commons and the door was locked. And the guard explained to me it was because the prime minister was about to walk down the corridor. And I threw a fit, reminding him that it was my House of Commons, that I had... the badge I wear, I pass a strenuous security test to wear, and it wasn't the prime minister's place to close corridors. So they did open it, but this PMO has tried harder than, well, it tries. I don't remember any prime minister's office trying to blockade corridors of power or the...
Physically.
Physically bar us from... We're not allowed on the second floor anymore.
Yeah.
You can't stand around there. And it's just, or the third floor, I guess it is, outside the prime minister's office is a place where, people used to gather to see comings and goings. But there was just a lot of pushing in the early days. No more scrums after cabinet. No more telling us when cabinet met. Very terse, hostile answers to the media. The whole thing was, it felt like high school in it. But I think the implications were important. And I think we lost that battle, frankly.
It's so ugly and aggressive. It really feels like in the most direct way the press is being told, you are irrelevant and we're going to treat you
That's right.
as an irrelevant factor.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. It's a really lovely way to go to work.
And then you get into, you know, tweeting important news. Mm-hmm. It seems like social media is being employed as an end run around the media to kind of make media obsolete.
Well, I don't have any problem with them doing that because that's what they think the media is getting the message out.
Yeah.
You know, if the prime minister's office and cabinet ministers want to tweet press releases or announcements, that's fine. It's the doing that instead of answering questions.
Yeah.
That's the worrying thing.
And then you've got like these very tactical press events with ethnic press that the mainstream press is shut out of. And then you've got like his own little propaganda reel every week now.
Yeah, the 24/7 thing is interesting. Again, it's getting the message out. You'd have to talk to somebody from the ethnic media. I don't want to speak for them. But I take it what the Prime Minister's office and the Conservatives have found, it's a little easier to shape your message in those places. And I don't want to be patronizing, but a lot of them depend on government advertising. I was a little shocked to find out that they were offering photographs with the Prime Minister. I find that icky. I don't go to the Prime Minister's garden party, but I think one of the last times, for any Prime Minister, and I think one of the last times I did go, I saw people lining up to have their photograph taken with the Prime Minister, and I just thought, that's not right.
The optics are not right.
We work with them. Yeah.
You say you think that we lost that battle, that mm-hmm. journalists lost the battle when that level of access was revoked.
Yeah.
Take me inside that battle. What kind of battle actually happened?
What happened was, I guess there was a walkout. I'm not sure how this goes chronologically, but the Prime Minister's office started saying that it would dictate the order of the questions and who got to ask questions. And the press gallery in Ottawa dug in their heels and said no. And I get that I wasn't at it, and I don't agree with boycotts, by the way, either. But there is a famous tussle in public where the Prime Minister refused to acknowledge the journalist lineup and was trying to do his preferred questioners. And after that, he uttered his famous line, we'll go elsewhere to get the message out.
Yeah.
Around that time, very seriously, the newspaper owners and editors got involved. I'm proud to say the Toronto Star, the Globe and Mail, and Canadian Press, the top editors at all three, wrote a letter with the Canadian. There was a meeting of the Canadian Newspaper Association. All the newspaper owners got together. But the Star, the Globe, and Canadian Press sort of took the ball in their hands and asked seriously and respectfully to the Prime Minister's office, what are you trying to do here? And that letter, as far as I know, has never been answered. They didn't bother answering it. So what we decided to do was to boycott the list. We would go to press events, but we wouldn't agree to the list.
Right.
And we would do it politely. We would just say no if they went around gathering up a list. And over the summer, this was in May and June of 2006. Over the summer, Post Media, I think it was CanWest then, and CTV decided, and Sun Media, to go along with the list. So then we would have these. So that lasted a couple of years. We would have these kind of Potemkin press conferences where some of the reporters would be on the list and others from the Star and the Globe and CBC English, not CBC French, would hang back and not ask questions. And finally, that's all fallen apart now, too. It's, you know, the Prime Minister takes questions and appears in front of us so rarely that it's merely an academic exercise now anyway.
So the few times when he does make himself available to the press, he has a list of who's going to ask the question. He doesn't know what the questions are going to be.
No, he doesn't. I haven't been to a press conference from the Prime Minister, I'd say, in years.
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell you how they go. He sometimes will talk to the media on foreign trips.
Yeah.
But it's like one, two questions. So it's not even a list. It's what the journalists then tend to do is get together and come up with the agreed upon list. There's a great story from this explains why I don't go on the foreign trips anymore either. The second trip, I went to Afghanistan, his very first foreign trip, and then he went to Mexico for the Three Amigos. And this was in March of 2006, late March, maybe April. And we had a press conference, a press availability with George Bush, Vincente Fox, and Harper. And each country was told you had two questions each, which is normal. And given that we were having our own press conference with the prime minister afterward, which used to be the drill, we decided that a Spanish-speaking reporter in our midst, Jennifer Tichburn, would ask the Vicente Fox question about the Ioneros who had died in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And we wanted to ask George Bush about the passport law, the passports at the border thing.
Sure.
And the prime minister's office came over and said, who's asking the questions? So we told them, here are the two. We picked Bob Fife and Jennifer Tichburn to ask those two questions. And he tried to tell us those we had to ask a question to the prime minister, and that that those two questioners were not good because one of them had to be French. And we just told him, go away. This is none of your business. This is – and he sort of poked some of us, yours truly included, and said, this is how things are going to work in the future. And, you know, just the whole idea that we were supposed to organize our questions to serve their interests and that they would ask so nakedly sort of set the tone for what came later.
You know, you say some of it comes out of his own personal predilections and prejudices, mm-hmm. but it also feels incredibly tactical, and it feels like
yeah.
this is
yeah.
– I mean, you've been covering politics throughout a number of administrations. It's probably safe to say this is the most controlled
yes.
PMO that we've had.
Yeah, and to be fair to them, they are dealing with the explosion of the information universe in a way that Martin yeah. Chrétien and, you know, any of the prime ministers I saw had never had to deal with. Twitter was not a factor even when Paul Martin was around 8 years ago. Facebook was new.
Yeah.
All of that stuff has blogs, really. Were not a factor in the liberal years. So a lot of this control is sort of like the law of physics. The more out of control the media environment, the more fragmented, the more one-note discipline mm-hmm. the politicians seem to have.
Well, I think that the calculation that Harper made was not just that he has all these other platforms to get his information out. I think that he also made a calculation based on how beleaguered the press is, that, you know, you're not powerful.
No.
And most people perhaps are suspicious of you and don't, you know, especially my base.
Yeah.
And I can render you even more irrelevant to a point where I can trade. If I limit my access to crumbs, then more or less he can set the terms. Is that a fair, you know, assessment?
Yeah, I think there's a very optical and tactical thing at work here too. This is a prime minister who does not want anyone to think that he is comfortable in power. And if he looks at ease dealing with reporters, which he is very much, his press conferences are the most lucid, informed. Whenever he does give a full press conference, you get lots of news out of it because he answers questions. But he does not want that image to go back to his supporters of a guy who's comfortable in Ottawa. So
press savvy. He's not supposed to be press savvy.
That's right. Yeah. No. And hating us is a hobby of the conservative base.
Plays well out west.
Mm-hmm.
But in making the calculation that the press could, you know, was somewhat less relevant than it had been and could be rendered more irrelevant, I have to ask, was he right?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Certainly. We saw during the last campaign, he allowed 5 questions a day. His plane was a hostile working environment, and it didn't mean anything to Canadians. They gave him a majority.
Yeah.
And the problems of the press are not the problems of the Tim Hortons Canadians.
Yeah. I'm probably like a 5 or a 6 on the scale of how closely I pay attention to this stuff and how much I know about it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like from where you're sitting. It feels as if the Senate scandal didn't even happen.
Yes. Outside, yeah. I think that's probably right.
I think we can say at this point he has survived it. He's dodged that one.
I would wait and see. Now, the Conservative MPs are not back from Christmas yet. And when I've talked to members of Parliament, they were hearing things out there.
Uh-huh.
But what they're hearing is hard to say at this point. I don't think it's done them as much damage as it feels like in Ottawa. But I think people were hearing things. The best way to sum up how Ottawa is right now is Bev Oda, the Bev Oda mystery. So Bev Odeh basically was in contempt of Parliament, lied to Parliament. That helped bring down the Harper government in 2011. And she got reelected, put back in her job, and the Conservatives got a majority. Then she spent $16 for orange juice.
Yeah.
And that did her in. And that tells you that the way we're working right now, or the way the world is right now, it is okay to be a bad parliamentarian, but it is not okay to be a bad consumer.
She also just gave the press a hook with that, right? Like that's, that's a headline.
But yeah, the Duffy affair too, again, it's very revealing that there is a serious issue of Senate reform here. There has been for a long time in Canada. I don't think the 5 days of hearings at the Supreme Court got anything like the headlines that Mike Duffy's outburst in the Senate did.
Yeah.
And that's basically the story of a senator gone rogue. It's more than that, actually. The Senate scandal is not the story of $90,000. It's not the story of a bad senator. It's the story, for Ottawa people, of the working culture of Ottawa.
Yeah.
And what everybody is jumping up and sort of shouting about up in Ottawa is this story is a very nice distillation of the way things have been working in Ottawa for a long time. The bullying, the enormous lengths they go to try to make stories and problems go away from
the message control,
right.
The micromanagement.
That's right. Lying.
Yeah. It's being argued to me like, well, Canadians don't really care about this. It's a minor scandal. Felt like I reject that outright. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, Watergate was a minor technical thing. But the fact that a president was involved and the fact that a president lied and the fact that the press had a bit of flesh in their mouth and wouldn't let go as they shouldn't.
Yeah.
Is ultimately what brought down Nixon. And I mean, I'll tell you why, you know, you came to be here today. I was sort of watching as Andrew Coyne was on Twitter reacting to Harper's end of year interviews.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I have to imagine, sure, you know, that no one had to submit questions in advance, but when you're cherry picking who you're going to, you have a certain amount of control, and there's a cultural expectation when you're an anointed journalist who has that, you know, he have four of those?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if you caught Andrew Coyne's tweets about this.
But I did.
So you know what I'm talking about. And he kind of very quickly, you know, after saying, why didn't you drill down to those journalists? Why didn't you ask some very obvious questions that Harper has yet to actually answer about inconsistencies in what he knew about the payoffs and Nigel Wright's involvement? It's sort of unconscionable to me. I mean, you can't imagine that happening in the U.S. or the U.K., that the press would just sort of leave it alone.
Yeah.
And when I asked Andrew Coyne if he would come and talk about that, he didn't want to. And, you know, even on Twitter, when people suggested, well, it seems like you're going after Mark Kennedy here.
You're one of your own colleagues.
One of your own colleagues. And he very quickly stepped away from that and said, no. There are so many questions to ask Harper, so little time. It's about the interviewee, not the interviewer. And with all due respect to Mark Kennedy, and I'm sure he's a wonderful professional, certainly there must be some room to say some things about how that happened and how it might have gone differently.
Yeah. I again don't want to get into, understandably, criticizing Mark Kennedy, because I've been in those interviews too where, you know, you just find the thing has got a life of its own and you can't get anywhere.
Yeah.
Especially, I think that's especially the case on television interviews.
But even that needs to be said. Even if you're not going to get that answer, you need on the record, like, here is the very specific detailed question. Are you refusing to answer it?
That's
yes,
right.
Or no?
Yeah. I don't know how he went around choosing the interviewers. He never gives one to CBC. Usually Mansbridge gets his year end at year's beginning. So I've been waiting to see something come up. But the Prime Minister also didn't have his annual Christmas party this year either, which is usually a chance for journalists to chat to him. I don't go because I don't. I have a rule that prime ministers aren't off the record, and that there's an off the record rule at that thing.
Seems so, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been in trouble before for the not obeying that, but I don't see the point in allowing a prime minister to be off the record, and I feel very strongly that we shouldn't go to that Christmas party.
Again, the idea that there's a party where journalists and the prime minister are sharing information that the public won't hear, it leaves a bad taste.
Yeah, from the very beginning, I've been saying this too, is there we were for the first year of this government being in power and taking hits on us. Another thing they do is they phone your bosses and try to get you fired, you know, which is always amusing. And all of this was going on. They had succeeded in some cases. And I didn't go to the Christmas party. And the next day I saw pictures of people singing Christmas carols around the piano at 24 Sussex. And I thought, you're making the point. You're making the Prime Minister's point that we are all a bunch of idiots, right? Who can be bought off by a free glass of cheap wine,
yeah,
a canapé, and some Christmas carols. And then everything's fine. And everything is not fine. The systematic efforts to threaten, intimidate, or marginalize the Ottawa media are not things to be sealed over with a Christmas carol.
Do you think that there is a timidity because, you know, you've got a lot of very vocal conservatives in Canada who feel that the press are all a bunch of, like, you know, liberal elites. So if you – it is not partisan in a, you know, anti-conservative party way for the press to say we are not objective in this one area when it comes to getting information, mm-hmm, and access to information. We are not objective. We are advocating for that.
That's right.
That's we are politically involved in getting access to information, access to interviews.
Yeah.
But do you feel like journalists are afraid to seem – partisan even in that respect?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that. I think that the threats to journalist jobs are real. You know,
yeah.
I think that the world is shrinking. I'm lucky to work for a paper that doesn't listen when the Prime Minister's office or anybody phones and says, you know, fire or reassign that. But there are bosses in Canada that would. And I think everybody is a little bit afraid of having their credibility destroyed.
But what could diminish the credibility more than to...
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, I'm hard line on this, but I'm not alone. The Christmas party is a really good example of where a lot of us have drawn the line.
Yeah.
I definitely draw it on the side of not going. I don't go to Tom Mulcair's or the other ones, too. Technically, my beat at the Star is the Liberals, so sometimes I have to go to, like, Liberal Party parties. But I try to stay away now altogether from that stuff.
Yeah, it's funny, like all the things that you can't go to.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the cost, is you lose access, or, you know.
There's another very strange thing going on in Canada right now too, is a lot of the comment is coming from outside Ottawa. The three members of the At Issue panel do not work on Parliament Hill.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Toronto Star has a lot of political columnists who don't come within 400 kilometers of Parliament Hill. There is the idea now that it's somehow easier or even sometimes a bit more credible to do commentary and columnizing from outside the Parliament Hill bubble, like we are part of the problem.
Do you feel that there's anything to that conception? As a news consumer, I have kind of like felt, as a lot of people feel, like, oh, you know, this Canadian politics stuff, I can't sink my teeth into it. It seems like it's all written in polling numbers. It's all written in an insular, mm-hmm, language that I can't relate to. It doesn't seem to have the drama of American political coverage. And then people conclude Canadian politics are just boring. And is that some Ottawa political reporting cultural thing? Is that true? Is it just more mild here? Or is it about how stories are presented?
Well, I do think you've got a point that the reporting on tactics is a phenomenon that's about 15 years old. It predates the conservatives. And I remember seeing it happen and thinking, well, that's interesting. Now, there was one story in particular I saw one day, and it was all about why the Liberals were going to adopt the children's agenda. And the whole thing was told with respect to constituencies they needed and geography they needed and nothing about children.
Right? Yeah.
There was no mention of that. Interestingly, I'm teaching a class this term, helping to teach a class at the School of Political Management at Carleton, and without telling tales out of school, literally, I found that I have to keep reminding the students that government and politics are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that often we're talking about government communication, it quickly devolves into political communication. And the idea of governing for all Canadians seems to be this quaint, old-fashioned notion. But I keep reminding people, the Prime Minister's office has to represent the best interests of Justin Trudeau, whether they like him or not either.
Yeah.
And the Prime Minister's office is not supposed to be this hyper-partisan thing trying to get people fired or stirring up mischief. And this is the first government I've seen that doesn't ask the partisans to do that job. You know, the Liberal Party was always doing you know, various things to criticize the conservatives, but it was usually the Liberal Party. You weren't getting these missives from the PMO, and that does seem more striking now.
You know, it's something that's been brought to my attention. Anytime either party releases an attack ad, you can count on the press to just say, hey, everybody, here's an attack ad.
That's right.
And discuss the strategy of the attack ad. Will the attack ad work or not? They'll play the attack ad. They'll post the attack ad.
We don't. We got wise to that a few years ago, that we were being used as free media. And often now you see political parties releasing something simply on YouTube, because then they'll get us to write about it.
It's like they're throwing a little bit of, you know, blood in the water and...
And then we'll all put it up, and they've got a free, something that would cost, you know, $20,000 in the Toronto Star is free media.
Yeah.
So we don't write about the attack ads as news, even though the political parties are often telling us to. If they're buying them, and if they'll tell us how much they paid and things like that, then we'll write about them. But writing about them just to give them some more coverage, we don't do anymore.
Mm-hmm. I mean, looking at this from like the numbers from the last election with the youth vote, where was it? Was that like...
2 out of 3 youth didn't vote, I think.
Yeah. And then I mean, the overall percentages aren't great, but it was over 60% mm-hmm. people did.
Yeah.
So you're talking about an incredibly disenfranchised. And the Star, I think Michael Valpy just did a series about just how, some research on just how disenfranchised young people are in Canada in general. And you look at that incredibly low voter turnout and you contrast it with the unemployment figures where young people, it's like there was no recovery after 2008.
Yeah.
We're still living in that, you know, it's these are at crazy levels, like 18% in Ontario, like it's nuts. And all of that feels quite consistent with a Harper Press agenda. It seems like, without getting conspiratorial about it, there's just no – having younger people not connect with these stories suits the interest of one party and not the other.
Yeah. I think due to a variety of things, and tactics are one, and the sheer ways in which our political system works, it is possible to win majorities now, and it is possible to find them through micro-targeted – constituencies in little parts of Canada all over the place.
Thus the focus on these ethnic communities.
Right, yeah. And, you know, I've written a whole book on this. You know, they actually found out that snowmobile owners were more likely to vote conservative. So what they do is they go buy the magazine subscription list for Snowmobile magazine, and then they target those people with postcards and things like that. And then once they're in power, they send out press releases announcing grooming, public money being spent on grooming of snowmobile trails. Now, all of this is because they can sophisticatedly break down the Canadian electorate into these little pockets.
Yeah.
Young people are not fitting into those constituencies, A, because they don't vote.
Because they don't have snowmobiles.
And they don't have stuff that they can, you know, they're not trying to buy hockey helmets for their kids or save up for education. So this whole consumerization of the electorate being turned into a series of roving markets that are being bought and sold for their stuff, that's not helped to get young people involved either.
That's so messed up. I mean, it's because young people are disenfranchised that they shall remain disenfranchised. If you have stuff, you have interests. If you have interests, then you're worth marketing to.
Yeah.
As a demographic, not as a constituency, not as citizens, but as consumers.
The encouraging thing is that that consumer marketing micro-target approach was pioneered by the Republicans in the early 2000s in the States, and Canada has imitated it. But the encouraging thing is that the United States has now moved to using that data to re-engage communities. And the United States, voting turnout is actually going up.
Mm-hmm.
And the disenfranchised are actually being brought to the ballot box through using the sophisticated micro-targeting to get people involved. And I am heartened to see that the people who learned to do this for Obama have been coming up to Canada and giving lessons in this. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, it was Chris Hughes from Facebook and a bunch of young social media people, Silicon Valley people and Harvard people who really started to look at American politics as an engineering question.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I did a really interesting session with Dan Wagner and Teddy Goff, who are Obama's two of key people on Obama's digital team came to Ottawa to do a whole afternoon with anybody in Ottawa who wanted to learn their methods. And the interesting thing is that all of this focus on technology and data and big data and small data has brought them around to the idea that the most effective politics is the kind that actually engages a person, keeps them involved, and that their friends are huge influencers. So rather than try to find out what kind of car they buy or what kind of fitness tax credit they want, the best thing to assure somebody's vote is to find out how their friends are voting.
Sure. It's like WOM marketing.
Yeah.
The word of mouth is what...
That's right.
It just is frustrating because it feels like, I mean, the name comes up a lot, maybe too much, but in the way that Jon Stewart has engaged people in politics through comedy, but also there's this kind of like larger movement that just as many young Canadians I know, I don't know if it's a movement, it's a sensibility of just people who are saying like, oh yeah, I guess I'm a citizen. I guess I care about things and sometimes in a very hyper-local way, but it has yet to gain traction in terms of Canadian federal politics in any way that I can, you know, anecdotally.
I'd say stay tuned. Have a look at what the Trudeau campaign is up to.
Is that like, I know that's the play and I hear him say the words middle class a lot and...
I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But I sat down not too far from this office during Justin's leadership campaign and watched them going through stacks and stacks of forms. Like they are feeding information into that machine and they are the ones talking to Obama. Last week, I sat down with Jeremy Byrd, who is Obama's national field director, who came up and gave some advice to the NDP. So it's out there. It's bubbling beneath the surface, but I don't know where it's going to turn up yet. But I'll be really interested to see the turnout numbers for the next election.
Is there a greater role that the press could play? I mean, I feel like you have a principled stand about what has happened with political reporting in Canada, and there's almost a sense of helplessness of how it's kind of been chipped away at. What can be done, not just to push back against Harper, but to kind of make this whole conversation more vital and inclusive and to engage people? I mean, like that is part of the job. It's not just to kind of report on politics in the tones that we always have. It is to make these stories sexy and interesting, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. That's a huge question. I'm encouraged by media like Twitter. The fact that you can see journalists doing their jobs and actually hold them to account minute by minute is a really interesting thing. I think Twitter has made me a better journalist.
Yeah.
I think it's put me way more in touch with my readers rather than my editors. And it's taking politics to the place where it should be, which is about conversation. So I'm heartened by Twitter's role. I think it had a reasonably important role in the last election. But somebody was pointing out to me, even now, 3 years later, it's hard to imagine a thing like robocalls, which I think was huge, and it was voter suppression, happening in the age of Twitter. Because people would just start saying, hey, on Twitter, I'm being misdirected.
Yeah.
And you can get an idea of the magnitude of people's concerns on Twitter. Now, I think it's reaching that critical mass, and I think by 2015, it's going to be where we have that conversation, and it may make us all better reporters.
Assuming that they're still reporting jobs.
Yeah, that is an issue.
Yeah,
that definitely is an issue.
Thanks very much for talking with me about this today.
Thanks for some smart questions. That was fun.
That's the show. Hope you liked it. You can email me at jesse@jessebrown.ca. I am on Twitter @jessebrown, and the website is canadalandshow.com. Big thank you today to Sean Craig. Without his help, this episode would not have happened. I make this show with Tanara Yelland, and we'll have another episode up on Monday. If you like Canada Land, recommend it.
Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.